I was so troubled by this, I had a shot at trying to figure out how to do something about it in my own classes. I had a class of 100, so each semester I had a class of about between 125 and 130 students in this particular course. Okay. And I took all the lectures and shoots, so entirely my, I started to get to know them all. Not all the names, but I knew who they were. At one point when I was teaching through this course, I abandoned what I used to do in tutorials. I used to have tutorials where I would give students tutorial worksheets. We'd work through those, they would work through those, and we would discuss them in the tutorials as a kind of learning experience. And I think they learned stuff out of that. I hope they did. I changed that, and I gave the students this task. After I would give them each week a task that required them to write a 300-word response. The task was one which required them to distill out of any sources they could get the solution to a problem related to the course. They could use anything in the lecture material, anything on the web, anything in textbooks, any source they like, but they couldn't find the solution in any of those sources. They had to work through and create a solution and had to encapsulate that in 300 words. Why 300 words? Because it fits on one page. It had to fit on one page. Each student had to bring three copies unmarked, printed out, of their 300 word. So, come to a tutorial. I'll just sort of simplify this a bit. This story is told in the book chapter. I'd come along to class and we'd randomise. I mean, I wouldn't have this business of them swapping with their mates, right? So they would hold them up in the air, and I'd grab a whole pile from here, and I'd grab a whole pile from there, switch them over, they sort them out. So I kept mixing them all up. So, and end up with someone else. Okay, so they've got somebody else's in front of them. They have already tackled the problem. So they're already a bit in the kind of window. My first question to them was, how good is it? How good is it? Give it a mark out of 20. I'll come back to that in a minute because it wasn't the best thing to do. Give a mark out of 20. What would you guess was their first response? No. Their first reaction to the task. I don't know how to do it. They weren't qualified. Right. Any other suggestions? Pardon? Where's the marking criteria? It's better than mine, it's right compared with mine, yeah.
How many marks do I get for doing this?
Yeah. Don't get any marks, I'll put him a name on it. Okay. The dominant thing was, where are the criteria? I said, aren't any. Is any good? How good is it? How can we mark this? We haven't got criteria. I said, just tell me, how good is it? Then the next thing they had to do, they had to commit themselves to this judgment of giving a mark. The next question was, the next subtask was, why do you put it there? Why do you judge that? Why do you so judge? Give your reasons for doing that, right? And don't do more than 50 words. Don't write an essay. I sketch out what was going through your mind when you led to that judgment. The third thing is, write some advice, again, not more than 50, 70 words, to the producer of this piece, telling them how they could have done it better. So they had to engage in producing feedback themselves. So that astonished them initially. They felt very uncertain about it because they hadn't done much sort of that sort of thing before. Then we'd switch them around. Sorry, we'd grow good of those. And then we'd randomise another lot. So they each had a shot at producing three lots. Sometimes we didn't get time for three. We only had two in 1 hour, right? But anyway, they were shot at judging to committing themselves to the judgment, writing a rationale for the judgment, and providing advice. Because I wanted to get them in the habit of doing that. I wanted them to start to learn to notice things. Right? And then they would all get their own back. And they'd have a look at the advice. One of the things they said to me was, what if this advice is rubbish? I said, could be rubbish. Could be rubbish. Could be way off the mark. None of us are any good at this yet. This is what you're supposed to be doing. You're trying to get better at making judgments. Okay. However, if you've got three people telling you the same thing independently, you should take some notice of it. It's probably right. If they tell you that it's not got the continuity it should have, it all has a break at this point, you should say, does it? Because that one might be right. If one of them says it, this person might be right. So, now I say, I've got them to give a mark out of 20. What I didn't realise was that every time you ask students to give a mark on a scale out of 20, or some other kind of thing, give it a grade, that loads into that exercise a whole lot of baggage. So what's 20? Is 20 out of 20 perfect? It's not worth anything, so I give it nil. No, can't fail somebody, 9. All this sort of stuff. I said, now cut that out. So what I would recommend now is you give them a line that says A at the bottom for abominable, B at the top for brilliant, and you say, put a cross on the line. Put a cross on the line, just wherever it is. And then defend that. Now, some things happened with that. The students started to learn to assess without criteria. And the point of that was I wanted them to discover what it meant to notice things. I wanted them to judge the big picture and the small picture together. In any case, whenever we give students a set of criteria, say there's 6, say, something like that, 6 plus or minus 4, we give them a set of criteria which are a selection from a larger possible pool. My question is, what justifies that selection? And if you're marking student work and you meticulously apply a given set of criteria, do you not find that sometimes a work stands out as really good and there's nothing to cover it? Yeah. Or do you find something, if you apply those criteria meticulously, it comes out with a better overall result than you reckon it's worth? And so then you have to say, well, it's not worth that much, so I'll give it what it's really worth, and I'll adjust all these other things to sort of show out it. Now, I'm not saying any of you would do that, right? But I've talked to some lecturers in other countries where they do that. Look, this is a problem with set criteria. And it also then puts a template on things where students have to look through certain colour glass. And they're supposed to see certain types of things. Some of the things we ask them to detect may not matter. And they might miss the things that matter. Now, you might say to me, so how do I know they're not all sharing ignorance about what good, bad, and indifferent is? What I haven't told you so far is that I also produced a response to that task. In producing the response to that task, I learned whether or not the task was good enough, well enough specified. Because I said to the student, you take that task literally. That's all the specifications you're going to get. Take it literally. And I have to do the same thing. So I did it before I gave the students the task. Can I do this, taking these words literally? So that each time I went to a tutorial class, mine would go into the pool as well, and 3 students would get mine. Because I wanted them to be calibrated against my ideas of quality. And once every few weeks, I'd give them all a copy of mine and say, this is the best I can do. Right? This is what yours should look like in the ideal world. This sort of quality, or better. Because some of you are going to produce better work than I can. And good on you.